Political issue. We've heard from the Department of Home Affairs, Department of Home Affairs has released a statement saying that according to them, the 160 travelers that arrived in Johannesburg from Nairobi, Kenya, were not, in fact, according to them, seeking asylum. We did listen to Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman a few moments ago, joined us in studio, sharing his sentiments, saying that there is actually evidence that they directly spoke to officials saying that they were seeking asylum. And of course, we also know that there was some support from other sectors of government, from DIRCO specifically, in terms of in support of processing these 160 people. But according to Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, he was saying that the challenges that they were experiencing, according to him, appear to have been coming from Home Affairs. We're now joined online by senior researcher from Mapungubwe Institute for Strategic Reflection. I am Gina. I was no stranger to VOC's airways to unpack this. And of course, I believe Naeem has an interesting perspective on this himself. Naeem, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Just to say that for the purpose of this interview, I'm representing the collective of civil society organizations that have been involved in this, Gift of the Givers and others.
Would you care to mention some of the other organizations have also lent their support to this cause?
There's several organizations in Johannesburg. I don't want to mention them lest I
forget someone.
But, you know, Gift of the Givers is one of the big ones. Caring Women's Forum is another of the big ones. Islamic Medical Association and a number of others in Joburg.
Now, I want to go to, I think, one of the most critical issues. And I don't know if you tuned in earlier when Dr. Imtiaz was having his say around the matter. He indicated that this is not the first plane with Palestinian passengers, according to him, seeking asylum that has landed in South Africa. He's saying this is the first plane that where the passengers have experienced challenges being processed.
Yes, there was the first plane came in on the 28th of October. And the modus operandi, everything was similar to the one yesterday. They were processed and given 90-day visas as Palestinians are allowed, and left through. Then the second one yesterday, again, exactly the same kind of thing happened in terms of the route, in terms of how people were brought and all of that. And then they had the kind of challenges that they did yesterday.
Now, I want to just maybe reflect on basically international law around refugees and people seeking asylum. Were we within those bounds, within those limits, as a country, if we, in actual fact, as the reports are coming out, if we had, in essence, kept people on the plane for a certain number of hours, there was also, according to Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, there was a proposed mandate to send them back to Kenya, to Nairobi. Were we operating within that ambit, within the rights of the South African government, if we were at fault, as some are saying we are?
So two things about that. One is that, and this issue our legal team is looking at, whether it's legal to keep passengers on a plane from a safety perspective for basically 12 hours after the plane has landed. And we're not sure about that. Our suspicion is that it is not, but we check up on that. The other issue is that border management says, and you quoted this early on as well, that people did not ask for asylum. This is just—it's not true. I'm saying this clearly. It's not true. We have videos of in the morning, yesterday morning, people. I mean, even one group chanting, "We want asylum, we want asylum," while border management officials were on the plane. One of the women, the woman who's 9 months pregnant, her parents arrived on the other plane on the 28th of October. They were there at the airport waiting for her. Why would she not say she wants asylum? She said she wants asylum. When we went on the plane, we asked people, who of you wants asylum? We want to know who wants asylum and who wants to leave. 3/4 of them said they wanted asylum. We then went around person to person with the three columns on a piece of paper. Those who want asylum, those who want to leave and have either the money to buy a ticket or have a ticket, and third column, those who want to leave but don't have money, and we will sponsor that. Three-quarter of the people said they wanted asylum. So the notion that people didn't say they want asylum or that they said they don't want asylum is, frankly, it's not true. I was there. I was on the plane. We did that. There were three of us from our group on the plane. We went around doing that and asking people. So I know what people said. We have pictures of when we said, who wants asylum, the three-quarter of the people whose hands were raised. We have pictures of that.
And then also, if we go back to the situation around the blockages. So I asked this question to Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman around where he felt the blockages was, if there were other sectors of government who had stepped in to assist to help make the process smooth. From your perspective, looking at how things played out, where do you feel, which institutions do you feel might potentially have created challenges in allowing the same smooth process as it had previously happened, according to Dr. Imtiaz, where another plane had also arrived and people had been processed?
Border Management Authority and the bosses, the Ministry of Home Affairs. That was clear. We had a very good relationship with DIRCO, very good relationship with the police. The police at the airport were wonderful. I mean, they assisted us as much as they could. They were the ones who arranged. I mean, the Brigadier of Police was the one who negotiated with, because he doesn't have that power, negotiated with APSA and Border Management Authority to grant us access to the plane. The police were great. DIRCO was great. It was Border Management Authority that refused to listen to people when they said they wanted asylum. And it was their boss, the minister, who we were told by officials there, who backed that up and said, no, these people must go back where they came from. The only time that changed was when the president issued an instruction to his minister that it must change.
And then the other question, and I think this one, again, going back to my earlier conversation with Dr. Imtiaz, I had asked him, with the intensifying situation in Gaza and the challenges that Palestinians are facing, especially now, and the humanitarian issue that is becoming more and more, dire in the country, potentially might we see more migrations of this nature? And his response was that, in actual fact, there should be pressure on the international community, in essence. It shouldn't necessarily, according to him, it shouldn't necessarily be a situation where any country per se is just receiving refugees, but also there should be an attempt to pressure the authorities, the occupying forces in Palestine to end the humanitarian situation that currently prevails.
No, absolutely. I mean, this, to say that what we're witnessing in Gaza is a bleeding wound is an understatement. We're witnessing a body that is being decapitated, de-limbed, and slashed open in all places. And the way to stop it is not by putting plasters on it. The way to stop it is to end the genocide. The genocide is still continuing. I mean, we say there's a ceasefire, but the ceasefire agreement as well is that 600 trucks at least per day should be allowed in, aid trucks into Gaza. The Israelis are allowing 200 a day. 600, by the way, is the number of trucks that was going in before 7th of October 2023 because of the dire situation. Now, after a two-year genocide, the agreement was that number, 600, and they're not abiding by that. Why are they not abiding by that? Because they want to continue the genocide through other means. And so the way to stop the creation of refugees is to fix that. The aid must be allowed to go in, the reconstruction must take place, and the international community has a responsibility to do this. In fact, the international community's responsibility is to force Israel to do the reconstruction. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the responsibility. Do we adjust refugee laws in this place or that place or in internet? All of that is irrelevant. The issue is that you have a genocide that is continuing and that needs to be stopped. You have an occupation and colonization process that's been going on for almost 8 decades, and that needs to end. And Palestinian people must be given their full human rights and the right to self-determination. That's the way to stop Palestinian refugees going elsewhere.
Can I ask, I mean, from your experience as someone who's been a journalist, who's been an analyst in a sense, how do we normally handle the issue of asylum seeking in this country? What does the normal process look like, just for the ordinary layman who's not au fait with these processes, especially a South African citizen who's never had to apply for asylum seeker status or refugee status anywhere else in the world? What does that process look like coming to South Africa normally, and where would you say we've deviated in this particular incident?
So it's actually much simpler than one might think. In terms of international law, and it applies to South Africa as well, and our domestic law, if someone pitches up at one of our border posts, whether it is at an airport, at a port on the sea, or one of our land borders, and says, "I'm seeking for asylum," that person should be admitted. There would then be an investigation. Obviously you can't come from the UK and say I'm from Britain and say I'm seeking asylum, and then expect that will be upheld. That will be investigated, but immediately you should be let into the country. Now, that applies even if the person arrives at the port of entry without a passport, let alone a stamp in the passport. Even if the person has no passport and says, "I'm seeking asylum," the receiving country has the responsibility under international law to accept that person, and then there's a certain number of days within which that must be processed, a response must be given, etc. There's case law in South Africa about this as well. I'm not a lawyer and I'm not au fait with those cases, but I know that there's case law around that as well. So it really is basically as simple as that. And that's why what happened yesterday is a bit of a confusion, but also very angering, that people chanting, and again, we have the videos, chanting, "We want asylum," and when we ask, why not giving them asylum, we are told, "No, they didn't ask." It's mind blowing.
Naim Gina, senior researcher from the Mapungubwe Institute for Strategic Reflection.